It is Saturday, March 3rd, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, our Week in Geek news segment, followed by a discussion about the state of consumer digital marketplace, and of course, your questions and comments.
Geek Speak is a production of KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio, kusp.org. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on our program, we have a research analyst at IDC, Karsten Veda, and we're going to be talking about the state of the consumer internet marketplace, or basically large corporations, what they're doing online, how they're making money, how much money they're making. Oh, we're going to fill it all in. It'll be wonderful. During the second half of the show, welcome to join a conversation. The phone number is 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. I'll give it that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. Geek Speak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, offering one appointment crowns and veneers for appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me are geeks Miles Elam, a Slacker geek and student, and Sean Cleveland, technical marketing manager at NVIDIA. Welcome, geeks.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Before we have our guest on, let's go ahead and do some geek news. What's up in the world, Sean?
Well, this is kind of a crazy story. You've shopped at Best Buy before, right? A lot of people...
A little bit. You know, I don't do it that much.
Oh, really?
But, yeah.
So usually you go online, see what the store has, look for sales. That gets you down to the store, right?
Yeah.
You get to the store and you notice, oh, the item's not on sale. What's going on here? I'll get someone to help me. And then they say, no, this isn't on sale. They say, well, would you please check the website? Because it says it's on sale on your website. Then they go to their computer, they pull it up, and no, it's not on sale. That's because they've had their own secret intranet site.
This sounds like
not,
a lawsuit
does
waiting
not
to happen.
Mirror the external site.
See, this is why I don't shop there very often. So did they get busted on this? They get
yes. Yeah. State Attorney General of Connecticut is now investigating this. And a company spokesman has finally come out and said this is true. They've had an internet site.
Sounds pretty devious.
And it's funny. They basically, later on, they say it's not so much the fact that they're doing this, it's that their store employees don't know how to access the extranet. And they had to go back and remind their
right.
employees
and
how to
employees.
Access the extranet site, or, you know, the external site.
So basically you're saying is also probably the staff didn't even know.
Right? Aren't they supposed to be tech savvy? I mean, this is Best Buy.
Have you been to Best Buy?
So it's just...
Keep in mind the views expressed on Geek Speak are no. Anyway, so are you
probably
shocked
best
by this?
To print the page, take it with you to the store.
Now, Sean, you sound upset about it. Are you shocked?
I'm shocked. Yeah,
or are you
I
just
am.
Frustrated because you've been duped?
I'm shocked.
Yeah.
But I've never run into this personally.
Yeah.
And I do check the sites first.
But
just the fact that this would happen, and it's been proven that people who have gone in to buy a computer, were duped out $150 of what
right.
they should have saved.
And they did research beforehand, and they realized that's
yeah.
the best place to go.
They go, and they say, oh, it's not on sale, it's not on the site here, and they don't get the $150 off.
I don't like it.
It reminds me of a ringtone site where folks will put in their information to get back and stuff. And there's a little checkbox that says, do you want to be added to our mailing list, and, you know, can we share this information? And just by filling in your phone number, it checks that box automatically through JavaScript. Mm-hmm. And if you uncheck it, if you hit submit, it rechecks it as part of the submission process. They were getting in real trouble with the Better Business Bureau. they would uncheck it, they'd go back.
This is your choice whether you want to or not. Oh, no, you chose wrong.
There was a YouTube video about it, like someone going through the motions, and
great.
It was just...
It's impossible to uncheck it without hacking the system.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
Because then the company would just say, what, they checked it. And who's going to remember some random form they...
Right. I didn't want to check it, but you did. By the time we got it, it was checked.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Sean, about Best Buy's not very
Oh, and by
good.
The way, there's a Best Buy store coming in at 41st Avenue.
Oh, in Santa Cruz. Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited about it.
You are?
Finally, we're getting, because we've always had a Santa Cruz Electronics up to this point, and they're good, it's just not very big. And sometimes I need
What's the big electronics store on 41st already next to Toys R Us? What is that?
Oh, yeah, there is one in there.
Yeah, it's Best Buy. Right?
Circuit City.
Yeah. Same thing. Okay, thank you very much.
their selection of computer stuff isn't.
Is Best Buy's consumer electronics focusing on computers?
No, they're more computers with some consumer electronics.
Oh, that's really cool. Okay, good to know. Thank you very much for that story, Mr. Elam. Hi.
Hi.
You look very fresh and happy today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so thank you.
Wow, he's wearing a collared shirt.
Yeah, he looks pretty nice, doesn't he?
Yeah. Hmm. That's interesting.
Sean, you and I were partying last night and stayed up late, so we feel a little.
Miles, you're a student now. You should be wearing t-shirts.
Yeah.
And
you're supposed to have a ripped t-shirt.
Sweatshirt.
No, that's what I wore to work. So anyway.
Now he's doing serious business of being a student.
He's a professional student.
What's up?
California looks like it's going to, or at least there's a legislator in California that's trying to move us toward the open document format. And I've talked about this before. It's an XML-based file format to replace Office documents. And the primary
Word and Excel documents.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the reason behind this is so that you don't have all of your documents based upon a single vendor. Anyone who has ever gone through, for example, the Office 95 to Office 97 transition knows that even different versions of the same software, like, for example, Word, will give you trouble. So what happens in 20 years if Microsoft's not around, or you have this document that's written in Office 2000 format, but, what do you do about it?
Right. Or, even now, I mean, I have documents that are earlier versions of Word. I don't normally install Word on my
computer. You go back
computers.
And install Windows 95 and
right. Now for
Office 97.
For each of us, it may be a hindrance. We may be able to try to figure it out. We're also, geeks, so we may just try to go and try to find.
Miles?
Yes, I am.
Man.
And at the same time, a city government may not have those facilities, or they may be, records, 20 years from now, we may not care about something we wrote, but a government absolutely cares about the records they have from 20 years ago.
So there's an open document format which basically says, here's the standard, everybody can use it, let's start using this for our formatted documents.
Right. So we're following the footsteps of Massachusetts, who was the first one to push this, and now California, Texas, and Minnesota are all
moving. Now, does this mean that we're mandating that in a certain amount of time, all the documents being created by government will be in this format?
It will depend upon the state. This one, it hasn't gone through yet. This is a legislator trying to push it through, and I'm bringing it up just in case anybody hears about it to call up their representative
say yes, open
this is a good
format.
Idea.
All right.
So all software applications have to support this format?
All documents have to be made available in this format. Have to be saved and stored and made available.
And is this so that they're re-editable? Because I'm assuming that PDF kind of does this as well, and that I feel pretty confident when I have a PDF document, I'll be able to open
PDF
that
does an
hundreds
excellent
of years
job
now, right?
It, yes.
So are we saying that this is for the ability to open documents and re-edit them, and so it's different than PDF?
PDF handles word processing very well. It doesn't necessarily handle Excel spreadsheets and presentations and things like that.
The idea is to make it for everything. Do you think that Microsoft is going to go ahead and make this part of their suite so that they can save in these formats or
start
using these formats?
They've been fighting it so far. They look like they were going to bundle it, but someone else actually wrote the plugin to export to that, and then they were looking at adding it in.
I would hate to see them just come out with some government version of it. To placate.
Now, bear in mind,
then the rest of us are stuck with all these different formats.
Now, bear in mind, this is not stopping a municipality from using Word as their authoring source. It just means that when they actually save to archive it, they should have a translator or something like that that has it in open document format.
I like the idea of it. All right, thank you very much for bringing this. And I know that you're kind of sensitive to the subject of governmental and large organizations' documentation because you used to work for a scanning company, and one of the jobs, Microfiche, I believe?
Laserfiche, yeah.
Laserfiche, was to scan all these paper documents and make them digital formats. So there's kind of a history for you in caring about, I guess, the printed word and...
Right, making it available. I mean, if it's... if it's public knowledge, which is what a government document is, mm-hmm. it should be available for everyone in perpetuity. It's something that you shouldn't require a tax,
right?
Which is what having to buy Word so you can read a document that you already paid for is.
Great. Thank you very much. Sean?
Yeah, I have a couple quick pieces here. Mm-hmm. Remember Stalker, the game that we thought was just so cool?
Yeah, but like 7 years ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seriously.
Seriously, yeah.
It went gold.
It's going to be released?
It's going to be released.
Does it require DirectX 10?
No.
Okay.
So GSC, the company who did it, some Russian Slavic-based country put this together. I forget which one.
Yeah, I can't recall either. But it's a whole...
But it's called Stalker, Shadow of Chernobyl. And they actually went to Chernobyl and
that's the most
took
exciting
photographs,
thing about
the game. And the right. game looks very photographic.
And didn't they basically use the Chernobyl area as the rendering in the game
yeah,
so you can play in that environment.
It looks amazing.
Cool. Did they base the mutated animals off of Chernobyl? Not so much.
We should maybe have someone on.
There's like Beastie Men walking around with, they can drive cars. No,
so the company THQ is putting it out, and it like I said, it's called Stalker Chernobyl, Shadow of Chernobyl,
right.
And the screenshots, you know, for a game
beautiful.
That's 5-6 years in the making, still look amazing.
Yeah.
Another short piece of news I have here is Google Maps has added real-time traffic data to a number of cities, including San Francisco, Dallas, Chicago, and New York, which means that when you go look at traffic, you know, roads, they'll be color-coded.
With
green means
patterns.
No congestion. Yellow is for minor holdups, and red means significant slowdowns.
Nice. So now you really have a reason to use your laptop in the front seat of your car, which is bad. What cities are doing? Anything in California?
30 American cities, including San Francisco,
cool.
Dallas, Chicago, New York. Probably go to Google Maps. They probably have an entire list.
Oh,
there.
we got to try it out. Well, speaking of,
and don't use your computer in your front seat.
No.
In
don't
fact,
use a computer when
I
you're
saw
in
a
car.
Story that, this past week. The police found a car that had wrapped itself around a pole, and the computer was still running.
Wow. What computer was that?
The guy – no, it's right. He veered off the road and hit something.
Was it a laptop?
He didn't say. I can't believe you asked that. So don't use
a
your computer.
I asked you a simple question.
Desktop computer sitting in
of course it was a laptop. I asked you a simple question.
Excuse me, laptop, yes.
Yeah, okay, good. It wasn't.
I say desktop, laptop. All so,
right.
Yeah, don't use your laptop and use your car.
All right. You're listening to Geek Speak. That's Sean Cleveland. I'm Lyle Troxell. We also heard from Miles Elam. Miles?
Yes, there's one last article. I'll do it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Evolution documents. This is
there's something fast about evolution, man.
Yes. There's this is from the peer-reviewed open access journal published by the Public Library of Science. There's an article about how people should avoid the use of the word evolution or evolve in documents so as to avoid controversy. So when people were asking about the chilling effect of politics in science, this is one of them.
Who's saying they should reduce the amount of usage?
This
of
is
terms?
The PLOS Biology journal.
So they're saying when you write journals to our science journal, when you write stories,
right.
try to refrain from using these words.
Right. That way we don't
evolution
get
and evolve.
Right. And sometimes it's for good uses. It's because another word may be more specific and maybe better just for rigor. However, it still lends itself to, yes, they're noticing that people are giving scientists a hard time.
They're
for
doing
that
searches on those words and then attacking those articles. Okay. That's
exactly.
That's sad state. Thank you very much, Miles, for that. This is Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. We have Karsten Vida is an analyst in IDC research with a focus on consumer internet. His upcoming report is called The State of the Consumer Digital Marketplace, which happens to be something that us geeks and you, of course, are very interested in. The report, in summation, I think, is a collection of the top 10 making of companies online. We're talking Amazon, Google, Yahoo, and so on. How much they make, what their business model is, and that sort. And speaking of traffic, which was Sean's earlier story, you guys right after this are going to shoot back up to San Francisco where you live. Karsten, thank you for being on GeekSpeak.
A pleasure to be here. Always happy to be in Santa Cruz.
So I'm assuming that you'll be checking out Google Maps to see how your traffic flow will be.
I already checked it out, actually.
Okay. Cool. You're on top of it, as they say.
I totally am, yes.
So what do you... So go ahead and give us a brief rundown on IDC. Sean was like, IDC? And oh my gosh. So what does IDC do, IDC research?
Well, IDC is a big market and business analysis company, and we focus on the information technology industry. So we cover software, hardware, consumer devices, mobility, And the internet. And what we really do is not so much different from what you guys do in journalism. Only you research stuff and talk about it.
And we don't get paid because we're volunteers. But yeah. Go on. Well, so basically, every Saturday morning you sit around the room and kind of decide what's going on, just pulling stories out of your It's more intensive than that.
No. What we try to do is we really try to basically figure out what is going to happen in the future so that our clients know what's going to happen in 5-10 years from now and they can adapt to that.
Who are your clients?
Well, it's usually big IT companies such as IBM or Samsung or like Sony, like the big information.
And so they want to get kind of this report, was it requested by one of these corporations? Or is it something that you just knew that would be applicable to?
No, that's just one thing that we do once a year. We just take, actually it's the six biggest companies, not the 10 biggest
six.
Companies.
Oh, sorry.
And
see, you're slacking off. No.
Yeah, well.
six biggest internet companies.
We can always expand on that later on, mm-hmm. I guess. No, but what we want to know is what's going on right now in the consumer internet space? Where's it going? How are the particular companies doing? What are their biggest challenges? What are their biggest strategic initiatives to tackle those weaknesses? And what are the opportunities and so on?
Now, is this report done?
It's done, yes.
Okay, so let's start off. Who's the biggest internet company or biggest money maker?
Well, biggest internet company right now, just by hair's width, is still Amazon. It's a little bit bigger than Google, but it's almost virtually certain. Google is growing so fast these days. Last year, they grew by over 70% in terms of the money that they make.
Wow.
And so at the end of this year, Google is pretty certainly going to be number one in the marketplace.
Okay, what kind of figures? What's Amazon's revenue or public revenue?
Well, Amazon last year made about $10.6 billion in revenue.
That is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. It's a big industry now. Google made about, I think, $10.2 billion. But we believe this year they're going to grow by another 25, 30%.
Oh, wow.
And
whoa. So they're going to completely dwarf Amazon. Okay, Amazon, I understand. Amazon is selling actual items. You go up there, buy books and whatever. And I use it all the time. We have friends have shopping lists, and so you're going to go to a place
at
the last
minute. Listmania is really cool.
What's Listmania?
That's what Amazon calls all of their lists.
Okay, so like I can make a list.
Anyone can make a list.
Yeah, you can have like expert lists of particular
topics. And then if you've got a login, you can make your own wish list, of course, and share that with people. But what's really kind of neat is you can do a one-button buy something.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. By the way, Amazon had a patent on, which really upsets me.
Do they
me.
Really?
They have a patent on the one button click. Well, I don't know if it's still there.
They were gracious enough to not enforce it. So
that's nice. That's nice. So in researching Amazon, you're doing more than just looking at the numbers that they're producing as their report that says over $10 billion. Yep. What else do you do with the company? Are you looking at all the features they have? Are you trying to kind of size them up from what their growth is, what features they've added? Or are you looking at in Amazon's situation, it's all about, of course, who sells through them, and that's a big part of their business model.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, we look. This is mostly about business. So what we look at is at strategic things. So, for instance, one thing that's problematic about Amazon is that they're making a lot of revenue, but they don't make a lot of profit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they take all their profit and reinvest it to grow even bigger.
And that's why we see these large warehouse facilities for Amazon popping up all over the place.
Exactly. And now, some investors say, well, you're already a big company now. You're not like a little startup anymore that where you invest all your profits back into the business. It's about time that you pay us a little bit profit, you know. But the guys at Amazon, they're sort of a little bit paranoid, you know. They're like, oh, we've got to keep running.
But isn't there a fear of growing too big?
No, I don't think so. A particular business like Amazon, that's a business that scales really well. That's not a problem.
Let's say the mindset about computer security actually gets to the level that I have about it, where things are pitiful. And the reason for that, of course, are all these spamming bots that are out there. Technically, 25% of computers theoretically are infected with these things. And so there's some idea that it might not be very safe to use your computer for purchasing. Something like that could severely damage Amazon.
It could, yes.
So what about that aspect of it? Are you concerned about that risk? Are you thinking about that risk? Or
no, not really.
Yeah.
It's for them, it's mostly they at some point have to really turn a decent profit so that investors are not walking away from
it. Okay, so is it really important that they get this investor money? With this kind of revenue, why do they need their investors to be real happy?
Well, this is all comes down to the price of their stock. If investors decide, they should have paid me a profit by now and Amazon doesn't pay you a dividend, then they will sell their stock. Their stock price will go down, and that means the company is worth less could be easier acquired by somebody else. They have less leverage to acquire somebody else. So it just makes them weaker, basically.
Okay.
And they don't want that.
Okay, but they're still doing $10 billion in sales of shoes.
I mean, if you look at it, I mean, there's no competitor even coming close to them.
No.
eBay is only half the size.
And eBay doesn't get that kind of... I mean, okay, eBay is one of your lists, since Google's really next. But let's talk about eBay, because it is such a competitor to Amazon to some sense, and it's kind of an interesting way to the world has changed and that you can sell anything you want. Anybody can.
Yeah.
What's their market value and such?
Well,
I don't mean for you to pull all these numbers out of your head. If you don't know, don't worry about it.
But. No, well, I don't know to the last little digit, but it's about $5 billion.
Now, is that their revenue?
That's
so
their revenue.
A lot more money is passing through them.
Then what?
Well, if their revenue is that, which is only a percentage of all the sales, then we're talking about a lot more funds going
through.
Well,
the revenue is basically the sales.
Okay, because a lot of it's going back to, of course, the sellers, right?
Yes,
right.
Correct.
So
just
really,
this is just gross revenue.
Yeah, so they're not making much. Well, what actually in okay. So the question I have, I guess, in the eBay situation is, if I sell something to Miles, I get money. eBay gets a percentage. Mm-hmm. The financial transaction, doesn't have to go through eBay. Mm-hmm. So their revenue is only what they realize from my percentage of the sale. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So that means that the amount of money that eBay is trafficking is much higher than the percentage of revenue that they're showing.
Correct.
So they theoretically are. More money is going through the eBay site, if you will, than on Amazon. Is that, do you know?
Possibly, yes.
Possibly. But you don't know those figures, really, because it's not part of their income.
Exactly.
Okay, so eBay's doing about half as good, if you will, as Amazon.
Correct.
How are they looking as a company in general?
Well, actually, they're looking really good. I mean, their core business still is the auction business, which was sort of, it wasn't doing bad by any means, but it was going.
I don't think it's doing great, though. I've not been impressed with the selection of the areas that I look at.
On eBay,
yeah.
Well, actually, what they did, one of the things they did last year was to sort of increase the fees for sellers.
They did.
They do that a lot.
And they did that because they wanted to get rid of the small sort of nitty-gritty sellers in order to increase the quality of the offerings.
The eBay stores.
Correct. You know, that's the thing that the early days of eBay, almost all of it was individual selling stuff. And now it is
businesses. The flea markets, when they get so big, you see the professional flea market people who are there every week.
That's right. And
the small mom and dads, you know, trying to sell their own stuff.
Right.
They kind of get marginalized into a corner of the flea market. That's what's kind
of
happening at eBay.
A lot of eBay is not very professional. But then this business is doing very well again. It was sort of not growing very fast for a couple of years, but now it's growing very fast. But they had different problems. They have PayPal. They also own
Skype. Right, a banking company. Oh, they own Skype. That's right. I forgot
and
about
that. Skype doesn't really go anywhere for them. It was a fairly expensive acquisition, about $1 billion.
Wow.
It's not making very much money for them. And
now Skype, of course, is an internet chatting system which allows you to do voice, and you can also call North American numbers. So it allows you basically to replace your phone to some degree, assuming you have internet. And for a long time, it was almost completely free, and now there's actually some paid services involved with Skype. But you're saying that their amount of usage is just not up there.
Well, the usage is there. The money is not there. Precisely because they basically do it for free for the most part. And that's sort of a business model that doesn't really work.
Doesn't scale even.
It's not really a business model. So they got to really try to push some revenue there. And I think they could be more aggressive about it, because it's a great service, works without a hitch. You can actually do video telephony.
Yeah.
So that's great. So I talk to my family in Germany. And
you use Skype all the time?
We use Skype all the time, and it's great.
Now, do you pay for this service?
No, it's free. But I'd be willing to pay, let's say $4.99 a month or something.
Yeah, some kind of standard fee. Yeah. So aren't they trying to do that kind of thing? Are they trying to monetize?
Well, they've been trying it in some markets now, and at the end of the day, it's also going to happen in the United States, I believe. I mean, it's inevitable for them.
Yeah.
We should take a break and come back and talk about YouTube, another acquisition that is free.
And Google in general.
And Google,
that's a great idea. But first, let's go ahead and mention that GeekSpeak is supported by Cruise IO Internet, offering DSL broadband, computer rentals, and tune-ups. Cruise IO has retail stores in downtown Santa Cruz and Watsonville. More information can be found online at cruiseio.com or by calling 459-6301. You're listening to Geek Speak. We're taking your calls with questions and comments on technology. We're going to focus on our topic at hand, which is large-scale businesses on the internet, Amazon, Google, Yahoo, and what they're doing. So if you'd like to call in with questions about that, please do. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, nice and slow. 476-2800 or toll free at 1-800-655-5877.
You really want me to read this?
I don't know.
Parents, cover your kids' ears. Sunday morning on This American Life on KUSP. In second grade, Rachel caught her dad putting money under her pillow after she'd lost a tooth. The evidence was clear. There was her father. There was the money. There was the tooth. Rachel's conclusion? Her father was not just an accountant. He was also the tooth fairy. Soon, other kids found out the astonishing news. Rachel's dad was the tooth fairy. Kid logic. True stories this week on This American Life. Sunday morning at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
I see what you mean. I thought it was going to be nasty, but yeah, kids cover your ears. Well, one thing that kids can be involved in is Castle Cottage, which is coming up directly after Geek Speak this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio. Today on Castle Cottage, my wife will be there, Daria Troxell. She's been directing a play at San Lorenzo Valley High School, Once Upon a Mattress. A whole bunch of the kids will be here to sing songs from Once Upon a Mattress. Great show, a lot of fun, and good times on air for the whole family starting 11 o'clock. On Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. GeekSpeak is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, Notary Public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to KUSP. My name is Lyle Troxell. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland and Miles Elam, and we have Karsten Veda, an IDC research analyst, and his recent report is all about large businesses online. We're talking about Amazon and Google and things like that. If you'd like to join the conversation with questions of that nature, please do so. He seems to be a wealth of information, and he's relatively nice, too, so we're winning in all counts. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-KUSP. Again, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Karsten, we were just talking about eBay and Amazon and things, kind of competitors, and purchasing Skype. Which, I mean, I like the company, but the truth is, every time I see one of these wonderful free services, I go, how can they sustain that too long? And one of the ones that's been high on my list, which Sean just mentioned, is YouTube. When I've heard numbers about YouTube 3 or 4 months ago that they're burning $1 million a month on bandwidth. Now, theoretically, that's kind of covered by some relationship, but how can you have a giant system like YouTube with no income?
You can't.
So why does it exist?
Well, it exists because they're still trying to figure out how to make money off of it. And I mean, this acquisition was really Google's bold bid, risky bid, I think.
All the stories said, YouTube, how can they exist? Where are they going to go? You know, it was everybody predicting that they were just going to crash and burn. And then all of a sudden, Google buys them for $1.6 billion.
Actually, does Google just buy them because they have enough money, and why not?
I mean, well, they do. They do have a lot of cash lying around. That's for sure. But the reason why they acquired is because they want to sort of diversify their income streams. They used to be. They're still very dependent on just money from search ads that they sell and on money that they get from advertising that they run the advertising network. So they wanted to diversify it. That's why they bought YouTube, because there not only do they have video ads. That's the plan. Anyway, that they can sell, they also tap into this hot market that's video ads, which are just
so Google's major. Now, how much money does Google make a year?
$10 billion.
Okay, so Google's main revenue source, 50% or so. How much?
60%.
60% is advertising. So they're
No. Hang on. So actually, 99% is advertising.
So they're like, we're going to diversify. Let's do video advertising. I mean, it's still advertising.
Well,
so.
it's a different kind of advertising. Yeah. Problem with search ads is they're not going to go away, but it might become less.
Yeah.
And we think that might also already happen this year with the breakthrough for video ads. So a lot of money is going to be shifted away from search ads into video ads, basically commercials online, if you want.
Yeah.
And that would directly hurt Google. And that's why they acquired YouTube.
But you're predicting they're going to grow by 20 to 30%.
Google is going to grow still by 25 to 30% this year, yes.
Okay. And do you think it's going to be video ads?
The jury's still out on that.
When we put that, we're going to put Google ads at some point on the GeekSpeak content that we put up. And so we'll be part of that growth, I guess.
We can actually pay for our bandwidth?
No, we'll make pitiful amounts of money because we, no. But it'll be interesting.
We've never made a dime on this.
I don't understand this. The basic idea is we're doing advertising. We make a lot of money doing advertising, but we need to diversify. So let's buy something for $1.4 billion that makes no money that we can put more money into.
Yes.
That's basically what you're saying.
it's a very gutsy bet that they made. And it's okay. The jury is still very much out on whether it's really going to pay off the way that they hope it's going to pay off.
But YouTube is a roaring success in the sense that everybody's using it, or at least I should say everybody below the age of 30 is using it.
It's hugely popular, yes.
And this, we're talking about YouTube as in you.
You know why, I think?
And Tube, T-U-B-E.com.
It's easy to upload stuff, and even that's becoming kind of controversial about the content, you know, and who owns it and copyrights and so on. But you can actually take a YouTube and embed it on your webpage, yeah, or embed it in your MySpace site. That's pretty powerful. No one else has offered that sort of capability.
Well, and everybody's kind of jumped on this bandwagon. MySpace now does MySpace videos. Google Video actually has a service. They haven't even taken it down, which does the same similar things. And there's a few coming around that do higher resolutions, and they're being more used on kind of professional blogs. I think there's some costs involved. Right. So this kind of service is being used all over the place. But YouTube, of course, it just puts everybody
to
shame.
So think about this. Everyone has figured out how to embed a YouTube video. They're doing it. They're passing it around. And all of a sudden, ads start appearing.
Well, yeah, that will really upset people. So how are they going to do this without...
Well, the fact is, at the end of the day, somebody's going to pay the bills.
Yeah.
So, and there's no way around that.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
people hate advertising, but most of the times they hate paying for stuff even more.
Yeah.
So I think there's no way around that. The problem with YouTube is that advertisers, big advertisers, will only go there if there is not such a lot of stolen content.
So that's the second thing.
Yes.
When Google purchased this, I remember some analysts talking about the idea that there's no way Google's going to buy YouTube because of the liability. Mm. See, when YouTube was just a startup with a certain amount of capital and they were, you know, burning through it fast and no one understood their business model, or they didn't have a business model, the idea was, well, no one's going to – I mean, the content's up there. It's copyrighted. You know, other corporations own the content that's up there. They could theoretically sue, but there's no money there. So when this rumor came around that YouTube was going to be purchased by Google, it was like, that's insane, because now the corporations will start suing and they'll get money from Google because Google has money. So how is Google protecting himself? Was it a really risky business?
I think it's a risky business. I mean, the rumor has it that they put aside $500 million just for lawsuits.
Wow.
What they're doing right now is they're talking to the big content providers like Viacom and NBC Universal and CBS and Walt Disney to get legal content. And now the content providers are like, no, you got to pay us more and you got to give us more control. And Google said, no, you can't have that. And they're like, oh, talk to the hand. You know, we're going to walk away. We're going to punish you for a little while. You know, so that's where we are right now.
I'm saying the only people being punished by not getting their weekly sitcom clips up onto YouTube is the company itself that's producing the sitcom clips.
Well,
I mean, it's very common to somebody to pass around a snippet of like The Office. And then I go, wow, if I watch television, I'd watch The Office. It looks like a lot of fun. So it's a really wonderful marketing strategy.
Yeah, there's a story at news.com right now. It's a Google court small YouTube deals. It says Google has been frustrated in its efforts to reach comprehensive deals with major studios and networks to put their video on YouTube. Meanwhile, it is forming partnerships with hundreds of smaller media companies that see value. So, and then I heard they got access to a bunch of 50s and 60s television shows.
They're going to put those up.
So they're really scrounging for content.
Get smart,
now,
yes.
Now, I got to say that, yeah, that'd be great. I would say that if Google/YouTube does this correctly for commercials, adding commercials in, I would love a situation in which if I have an account and I pay a little certain amount of money, the videos that I get served from YouTube, no matter where they come from, have no ads. And that if I don't have an account with them, they have ads.
They
so
might
then I
do
can
that.
Decide that. That would be beautiful.
And they can't be
the
long ads.
Choice.
They've got to be quick.
Depending on your service amount, they're shorter or faster at
the
end. I mean, I think that – see, the thing is, I've heard the idea that they'll be putting commercials – the person that uploads gets to decide if there's commercial, and then they get part of the revenue from that, which is cool. I get that idea. But I think that the idea of this the user-based web is a pretty strong idea. You should give that power to the person that's viewing it, not the person that's necessarily uploading it. So there's an interesting thing there. I'd love to see how that pans out.
Yeah, it could go anyway.
We just got from Lompico, Lawrence called offline just to say, hey, you've only mentioned three of these top six companies. What are the other three? So let's go. Can you go ahead and go in order of the top six internet companies?
Yeah, let's name them off.
All right, that's Amazon, and then we have Google.
Okay.
Then we have AOL Time Warner, which is also a biggie, not in terms of advertising, but it's still a very big online company, even though they're in trouble. There's Yahoo. There's eBay. And there's the Microsoft online services business.
Oh, I can't wait till we get to talk about that.
Well, let's go ahead and do AOL, because we've already done Amazon and Google and eBay. AOL, what's the story with AOL?
Well, AOL is... they're in trouble. They're in the middle of a dramatic shift from the subscription-based business model to a business model where they basically finance from advertising.
Wow.
And their problem is that the losses that they have on the subscription side are so huge that they can't really make it up on the advertising side with new business. I mean, no doubt about it. These guys have put up a valiant fight last year. They made great progress with selling ads. But for the next couple of years, we believe they will, in terms of the overall revenue they're making, they're going to lose a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll eventually make it. I mean, we were sort of interested to see, are they going to go on the fatal tailspin, you know?
Right,
but
right.
They won't. We believe they're going to come around in 2 or 3 years.
Okay, so in 2-3 years, they're going to be looking a lot more like Google, having a lot of their revenue coming in through
precisely.
Ads.
Yeah. It's going to be mostly advertising.
Okay,
based.
Let's talk about this advertising thing then.
Mm-hmm.
Last night, this little party where we realized that you'd be a great guest on Geekspeak, last minute, huh? So we're talking, and I started asking people, Google making $10 billion off of advertisement. And people are like, they're like the banners? I'm like, no, the AdWords thing. Those words go off the side, and you said, 60% of their revenue comes off AdWords, which is these text advertisements on their search engine and also on other people's websites. And a few people at the party were like, what are those? I'm like, the strip on the right-hand side that you don't click on. Oh, yeah, that's there. So how are they making so much money? How are they making, $5 billion off of something that a lot of people don't even see?
Well, it's because there's a lot of search ads, and they're just very, very effective.
So they make money when somebody clicks on it?
Yes. They only make money when somebody actually clicks on it. So... was that my phone?
I don't know what that is, but it's really fascinating.
I've never heard that before.
it's just very, very big, and it's very effective. So that's why advertisers go for it, and that's why it's such a big business.
Okay, so it's effective in the sense that the ads are everywhere, and every once in a while someone will click on them, and when they do click on them, the receiver of the click has to pay Google some money.
Correct.
And AOL will start doing this, and Yahoo already does this kind of thing
yes,
too,
correct.
Right? So the question I have is, for these people that are putting up advertisements,
mm-hmm.
is it effective for their business model? I would assume that it is, or they wouldn't be doing these advertisements.
It's very, very effective.
Okay.
Because the bang for the buck that you get is just so much more better than other media.
Yeah.
I just talked to the other day, a speech coach who's got his own little website, and he says, you know what, we used to spend $25,000 on print ads in airline magazines and magazines like that, and we would hardly have any return. You know, now I spend $10,000 on Google, it's just so effective. We get
okay.
such a lot of traffic, such
because
a lot
of
interest.
So focused. Is
yes.
that because?
Ads are really only good if they are relevant to what a particular person wants. So
yeah,
you search for, let's say...
Backup software, like recovery software.
Yeah, for instance, you search for backup software and, there's all these companies with search ads that sort of advertise their services, and the likelihood is just so high that you're going to click on it and go to the
And that's
offer.
That's one of the things that's really interesting. The part of the service agreement with Google when we would do these advertisements is that your links have to be relevant to the search terms that are connected.
Correct.
And that's an important aspect of it, so that those ads will theoretically take you to something that you're interested in. And that's not necessarily true with banners. Like sometimes you'll see these flashy things like punch the monkey kind of thing. You're like, I don't even know what it is, but I'll click on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're not really sure why you went there. But with these advertisements, it's like, and this is a very common thing for me, someone will call because they hear the show, I'll hear someone from my past, and they'll call me up, hey Lyle, how you doing your show, blah, blah, blah. My hard drive crashed, and how do I recover it? And the continual thing for me is trying to find a free software package that I really like for data recovery, and so I'm always doing some searching for data recovery, and normally I end up just going, do a search for data recovery, on the right-hand side, pick one of those companies, buy their product, and you'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a nice thing to be able to do, kind of throw it off to a corporation, but
so AOL is starting to do this sort of thing as well now.
Correct.
They're trying to tap into Google's market. And now, is this just on the AOL pages?
Yeah, all over the AOL service. MapQuest also belongs to AOL, so that's part of the whole overall pie, for AOL.
You know, we do have a call from Santa Cruz, Perry. I'm so sorry to keep you waiting so long. What's your question today, Perry?
As I've been waiting, you guys have pretty much answered it. I was just wondering how Google made all its money.
Yeah, advertisement. 99% advertisement.
Yeah.
So, Perry, are you kind of shocked as we were that it's like $10 billion worth of advertisement per year?
Yeah, like how much do they get per click?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, actually, you are in a bidding contest as an advertiser. So let's say you sell a car, you're a car manufacturer, and you want to sort of purchase the term car, so that when somebody punches in the word car, up comes your ad. But there's other people who want to also be there. It's not just General Motors. It's also Volvo and BMW or what have you, Toyota. And so you actually bid for the highest rank in this in the sponsored search ad section.
Wow.
So if you want to be number one, of course you have the highest likelihood to be seen, to be clicked on. You got to pay more than the next guy.
And then you don't actually pay until someone clicks on it.
Correct.
So, wow, you could really get in trouble here. If I went up and said, I will spend $1 per click on car,
yes,
all of a sudden I've shot through my money pretty quick, right?
Yes, you have to sort of define a budget on a monthly basis, the amount of money you want to spend for advertising.
And it's one of those things where it's very cool to use. Like it's kind of a fun experience setting up your campaigns. I don't know if you've ever done that. Did you try it out?
I actually did that. And it's a great tool. And
you can do things like, well, these words with these phrases, and I want to put this much money into this word over a period of a month, and
correct,
and then it will actually slow down the amount of time you get it, so it's spanned out a little bit. I mean, it's a pretty impressive
system. It's pretty impressive. That's actually the beauty of the system of search ads, is that it's almost completely automatic. There's no expensive sales staff. It's like people go there, it's all set up automatically. I mean, there's salespeople who will call you for support and all that, but it's not like there's a huge sales staff.
Yeah.
So it's very cheap to do.
Overhead is really
Perry, thank
low.
You so much for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So we are taking calls with questions and comments. We're staying on topic today, which is basically Amazon, Google, AOL, Yahoo, eBay, and the Microsoft online services. The phone numbers, if you'd like to join our conversation, and please feel free to do so, 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. And, of course, that's in the 831 area code. And we're available toll-free throughout California, 1-800-655-KUSP. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. And let's go ahead and do the last one. Well, let's go.
Actually,
let's
before
Yahoo
we leave AOL,
uh-huh.
Karsten, I got to
yes.
know, how many people are actually picking up the AOL disk and installing the software and using it? Is that a positive growth
for
them? Or?
No. They don't do that anymore because it was it had become so ineffective for them because it was hugely expensive. At one point, they actually made sort of a positive return on these sort of events where they send out all those disks all over the place. They don't do that anymore. In fact, last year in August, they decided that they would basically stop to promote the subscription business, and they would actively help people who said, no, I want to switch to a free account now. And that's what's happening right now. So people are in droves.
They're switching all their businesses to free accounts?
Yes.
Okay.
It's very gutsy.
Yeah.
These guys, it's tough for them, but I think they're doing a great job.
Okay. So and we're talking about all those disks that are everywhere. You get free 30 hours kind of thing. In the later stages of the AOL just throwing these disks out, their packaging became really quite cool. I've kept the packaging. One of them was a wooden CD case. One of them was a tin CD case, and there's been other versions. That must have been extremely expensive. And they just had a whole bunch of capital to run on. Did those pay off, those later ones?
Well, I mean, obviously, the attempt is to make you more likely to, like, put in this CD into your machine, right? And,
right.
And sign up to AOL because you get this little goodie, the wooden
right.
thingy, you know. But I don't think at the end of the day it paid off for them anymore. It's just
something
too
else
expensive.
They should do is YouTube type video. They've got the whole back catalog of Time Warner.
Yes, correct.
Music and movies and media.
It's a big
and
strength that they have.
Not tapped into that at all.
Now they're going to do that. And as I said before, video ads are going to be hot.
Right.
And video content lends itself very nicely to display video ads against. So
are all the Looney Tunes Time Warner? They are, aren't they?
Yeah.
I would think
wow.
so. Yes.
Man. That's a lot of cartoons. Really appropriate for online content too because they're short. All right. We're going to take... let's go ahead and do a little Yahoo. What's going on with Yahoo? How are they doing?
Well, you know what? If you would, first of all, I have to say I used to work for Yahoo back in the day, so I was employee number one in Germany. Was charged with setting up the
so
German
you,
office.
You know a little bit about Yahoo.
I know a little bit. And I followed them over the years, even after I had
left
the
company. You're Yahoo employee number one in Germany.
Yes, correct.
Wow, I didn't know that. We should have led with that. That's more interesting that you're research analyst for. Anyway, go on.
IDC.
So did you? Yeah, that's actually kind of.
And
so.
if you would look at Yahoo just like that, you would think, well, this company's doing great. You know, like they make like, I don't know, $7 billion in revenue or even more. Double-digit growth year over year, very experienced management team, years of media experience, very diversified product and services portfolio. But then you compare it to Google and people realize, ooh, they could grow actually a lot faster. They should. That's what Wall Street thinks.
Okay, so they should keep on reinvesting and make the business bigger? I mean, how?
More sales. More sales. They need more sales.
More sales of what? Advertising?
Advertising. Mostly advertising. Also other stuff. I mean, they do some e-commerce.
See, that's the thing. The thing is, like when we were talking about AdWords and I know how easy it is to set up Google and blah, 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 I know quite a bit how that works because I've used it. I don't even know how Yahoo does their advertising. I'm not very familiar with it.
I don't see a lot of advertising with Yahoo.
And I don't see a lot of advertising. Yeah.
Well, they do search ads just as Google does. Yeah. They also do still what we call display ads. The good old banner ad falls into that category. They also started to do rich media ads, i.e. video ads and flash-based ads. So they have a whole slew of different ad formats.
The other thing that Yahoo's doing, and kind of in the light of Google to some degree, is they're producing a lot of really wonderful development tools. The development, like the web development community support
Yahoo Labs
is
are really good.
Yeah.
My Yahoo page is really good, too.
Yeah, and my Yahoo interface.
I use my Yahoo every day.
Do you use Yahoo as your search engine?
No, I use Google. But I use my Yahoo to gather all my news and RSS feeds.
Uh-huh. Carson, what about you?
I got to admit, my first page every morning is my Yahoo,
Is Yahoo? And you use search engine there?
Lately I've been playing around with Microsoft Live Search and with Yahoo and Google to sort of see which
one is better. All like,
And I think that Microsoft Live Search is actually as good as Google.
Really?
And Yahoo is, maybe a little bit worse,
okay,
but not by much.
You just mentioned Microsoft. That's the sixth company. Let's go ahead and talk about the online side of Microsoft.
Yes, Microsoft Online Services is really a big enigma. Because they have been, this is a big growth market.
Why don't they own the world? It doesn't
make any
sense.
This whole online market, it grows by 20-30% every year, and they've been languishing for a long time now. They've been at $2.6 billion a year for full 4 years now without any uptick in a growth market. I mean, how do you do that?
And 90% of all computers, their default page is them. I mean, they've got a leg up on everybody.
Yeah, it's really weird. I can't really explain it. Except for the fact that they are not a media company. They're a software and engineering company. So they don't have this media mindset that you need to actually be a medium.
They don't have a strong marketing department or something?
So it's not going anywhere right now. And they maintain, we're really serious about this. We're putting a lot of, and they actually did put a lot of money into search. And Ray Ozzie, which I really admire and respect, like a really smart guy there, the top tech guy there, he said, Google's success in the online advertising business was really a wake-up call for us. We're really serious about this. But you know what? It's not going anywhere. And so we really have to wait and see this year where things are going with them.
Yeah, right. I checked my MSN account recently. Yeah. And
I never signed up for it. I didn't like the whole passport.
Well, I had to reinitiate it because it had gone away. And I checked it I swear, less than 2 months ago. So the engine's not nearly as sophisticated as Yahoo, which is not
email.
As sophisticated as Google for email.
Right? Yeah. Well, the Yahoo, you're using the new Yahoo email?
It's
better.
Amazing. I like the tabs.
Yeah.
It is kind of the search tabs.
I've got accounts on both, but I use Gmail more.
Yeah, me too.
Let's go ahead and ask one question. Let's get a question from Pacific Grove. Gene, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning.
Good morning. What's your question today?
Going back to AOL, I'm an old-time CompuServe.
I remember, I just
got an email from him, said if I could get a Vista computer, forget it, there will not be. So they're going to let a million of us go away when we get Vista computers? I mean, isn't that because they can't advertise if they don't have users? And if I have to do that, I'll probably go to
IO
or something.
Are you still using the CompuServe interface?
Yeah.
Ah, well, that's why. Because CompuServe is now... Well, Carson, you want to talk about this?
I don't even know what's going with CompuServe. All I know is they're part of AOL now.
Yeah.
And I haven't really followed over the past
couple
years.
It's amazing. At one point, it was your internet connection was either AOL or CompuServe. Mm-hmm. It was pretty common. And CompuServe opened up the internet a little sooner, meaning that you could actually get outside of the portal that was AOL pretty easy. And then AOL purchased them, and everybody assumed that CompuServe would fade away and all the users would be migrated
over. They couldn't make us go away.
CompuServe is still being used, right? You would basically leave if you...
Yeah, they said... They keep trying to me to join AOL, and I said, no, forget it.
But isn't it the same thing? I mean, you pay the same amount of money. I mean, why do you like CompuServe so much?
I don't have any of those problems everybody talks about with AOL.
Okay, why not move to AOL's features? I'm assuming that the AOL interface is more up to date than the CompuServe interface.
You know, probably all of us that got into it, I don't know how many there still are. That's why I was asking your guest if he knew. You know, I think there's probably a million people out there like that. We're probably just conservative old dogs.
What's your operating system that you're currently running?
ME.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know if they have an XP version. I guess you could run the XP version.
Yeah, they go all the way to XP, but they just wrote me an email saying if I get a Vista computer, I'll either have to go to AOL or some other...
What happened is they wrote the software for like Windows 95, and that software has worked okay all the way up.
Vista has changed
the programming model. So,
sure.
I mean, it sounds like you're staying with CompuServe because if it ain't broke, don't fix
it.
But at the same time, if you're following that mantra, you're not upgrading to Vista. That's a major change.
Yeah,
well,
that's going to break
not.
Everything.
I'm just saying, yeah. I'm just wondering, you know, why they wouldn't want to keep all of the
I just verified that there. CompuServe is saying that they're not compatible with Vista.
Yeah.
I guess they're trying to finally kill it, I guess.
Maybe they just don't have it takes a lot of resources.
It takes a lot of resources to update an application, yeah. That's for sure. And, of course, Vista's not taking off like it was supposed to take off. So, but they're gonna lose people eventually if they don't handle it. I think that probably AOL's like, you know, if our loss is so amazingly strong right now, we're losing so many customers, if we lose all the CompuServe customers...
A few more doesn't hurt. Okay.
I think that might be the issue. Thank you so much for the call, Gene.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Good luck with CompuServe. I think that was the first, not my account, but the first online account I ever used.
Now, Carsten,
and you forgot Prodigy, too.
Prodigy, oh, yes.
Yeah, so, Carsten, for email, what service do you use?
I use our internal mail service, which is Notes, Lotus Notes.
Lotus Notes, really? Yeah.
Now, do you use Yahoo or Google? Or?
Oh, as a web mail service?
Yeah.
I use Yahoo Mail.
Oh, okay.
So now, are you using Yahoo Mail just because you know a whole bunch of people love them, and why leave it?
Oh, well, it's just because... Basically, we built it for Europe, localized it for Europe, so that's why I had the account in the first place, you know,
right.
And I just always stuck with it.
Yeah. No, it's their new engine. I like it.
The new mail client is actually pretty cool, I think.
All right. We're going to take one more call today from Lompico. Is this Marianne, who I've known all my life, Marianne?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Marianne. How's it going?
Good.
What's your question today?
Well, the question would be it's going back to Google and YouTube. Have they incorporated any of the Screen Actor Guild or any of the union dues, and not dues, but paying the actors that if they're going to do little clips from different shows?
That's a really good point. Like, I would assume, of course, the sitcoms, they're just signing their lives away to the corporation that's producing the sitcom. But, yeah, do you know anything about that?
That's a very, very good question. I don't know, but I doubt that they have taken care of that.
Yeah.
But they will have to eventually. I mean, this service is not going to go anywhere without really being on the up and up and all legit all the way.
Yeah. But it's going to go that direction, right? It kind of has to.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I can envision services that are going to be wonderful. The idea that musicians could upload their music and saying, you can use this, it's only going to cost, you know, we only have to have an ad at the end of it for this, and the musician gets part of the revenue for the ads. I mean, there's a lot of ways to share income and make new collaborative works.
The whole user-generated content sector, that's actually one of the Web 2.0 things, which I think it's not a lot of hype. There's actually something going on there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, services like Yahoo Answers or MySpace or YouTube are hugely popular.
Professional performers and artists are looking at this model of like, well, is the union that represents me going to get a cut of this, therefore am I going to get a check? And I think of it as union obsolete, get rid of it, you get your services and costs directly because you're amazing. And I get in theoretical discussions about this with musicians, especially published musicians, there's this idea that, no, it's something protective. And this whole idea that the publisher will filter the content. What about all those aspects when we're talking about this kind of space?
Well, that's actually a phenomenon called the long tail. Used to be the case when you just had brick and mortar shops, the big companies would decide what music would be on the shelves because there was limited shelf space. Now the shelf space is virtual, it's unlimited. And if you're a little band in Santa Cruz trying to make it, yeah, sure, you can go online, distribute your stuff yourself and get money for it.
Marianne, thank you so much for the call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, the long tail is a phenomenon with internet that has really helped Amazon, especially.
Yeah, correct.
Did you just describe it pretty well, do you think?
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't ask me to do it in terms. Yeah, no, don't. Please don't.
GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. The Geeks this morning were Miles Elam and Sean Cleveland. Our guest today from IDC Research is Carsten Veda. Thank you so much for being here today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, guys.
It was really wonderful. I hope that every time you come into Santa Cruz, maybe sometimes when you don't even call in, I'd love to have you on the show again. It was really quite wonderful. Answering the phones today was Rick Filmon. He's here every week, tirelessly helping us out from behind the scenes. Thank you so much, Rick.
Thanks, Rick.
And for calling in, all of you that called in, and for just listening, thanks for putting up with us for an hour. We appreciate it. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz, KBH San Ardo, on the web at kusp.org. Talk to you next week. My name is Lyle Troxell.